Today's program was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners. It is hot in the city today on Monday, July 6th. I'm sitting in a shipping container in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and that means one thing. That means it is time for Tech Bites, the Heritage Radio Network show where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. Before we get the show started, I always like to introduce everyone who is here in the booth so you can match the names to the voices. First up, the most important folks are the gentlemen in the booth who turn my shipping container combos into broadcast radio. First up is Jack Inslee, the station's executive producer and the stylish DJ of Full Service Radio on Thursday nights at 7:30. How are you, Jack?
Hello.
Oh.
See, you asked for sound effects, so I don't know. It might get kind of crazy today.
I listened to the first time to a show called Gunwash, which is on Thursday nights after Jack's show. And the impetus for my listening to it was because Declan, formerly our intern, now our associate producer, was special guest on the show to fete his high school graduation.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a lot of sound effects. And I was like, wow, maybe we can get some of those on Tech Bites.
Oh, we can.
Declan, how are you?
Hello, hello.
Very good. And our special guest today who came out to Brooklyn is Shen Tong of an accelerator called FoodX.
Hello.
Thanks for making it out on a hot, sunny Monday.
Just glad I'm cool enough to be in Brooklyn now talking about food.
It's exciting, right?
Yes. Food is new black, of course.
Always. Always. Although people don't really like black food. So that's therein lies the irony. The first thing that we do at Tech Bites is we start every show like a great meal with an appetizer. And we all go around the studio and talk about our current favorite apps, new apps, old apps. Declan, do you have a good app for us today?
No, not really.
You're kidding.
Uh-oh.
You're kidding.
I don't really have an app this week, unfortunately. I could say one that I really like.
Well, that's what it's about, saying one that you really like.
I know, but I didn't find a new one, so I felt, you know, I felt like maybe I shouldn't.
It can be old favorites.
Old favorites?
Yeah.
All right. I'll go with Instagram, one of the old favorites and a classic, really. You know, it's just a lot of fun, and a lot of my friends have been posting really funny things recently, posting about 4th of July and just, like, crazy fireworks, and it was a lot of fun looking at it over the weekend, so I'll go with that.
Instagram, interesting for someone who wants to be a DJ and study music because Instagram really has no sound.
Yeah, true, the videos have some sound. I thought it was funny this weekend looking at all the Instagram photos, the bad Instagram photos of the fireworks. You know, you're like all the way back in a crowd or on some roof, like real far away, and there's some blurry little shot of a firework.
There's always bad Instagram photos, regardless if it's a holiday or not. What's your app this week, Jack?
So my app is called, I actually have it loaded up right here. It's called Headspace. Now, this is a meditation app. I was talking to you, Jen, last week, actually, about my idea to start Tech-Free Tuesdays, where when I come home from work, I'm just, like, not on the phone, not watching any videos or consuming any media, doing anything but that. And then I just stumbled into this app called Headspace. I actually got the tip on a few things with Claire and Erica, which airs every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. Great show, the ladies from Up A Kind. And basically what the app does is you have all these different levels. You start off with a 10-minute meditation level. And now I've yet to do a session. I got the app over the weekend. But basically the way it seems to work is you kind of press play. It gives you a little video to get you ready for your meditation. And then, you know, you're supposed to do nothing for 10 minutes and meditate. And then it tracks your average meditation, the total number of sessions, your total time. It kind of counts it against your friends, if you're friends with anybody on the app. And there are all these little rewards that are built in, and I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
So it's a meditation game.
Kind of, yeah, which seems a little bit like...
Contrary to the whole concept of meditation.
Yeah, totally.
Is it guided meditation? Does it talk to you during the 10 minutes and tell you what to visualize, or is it just a timer?
No, I think it's just a timer.
So is that going to be the exception to your Tech-Free Tuesday?
Yeah, potentially. Or maybe I'll start my Tech-Free Tuesday with a Headspace
and
session,
then turn everything off?
And then shut off.
Okay, you'll have to let me know how competitive you get and if you become, like, the meditation champion.
Right, yeah, I'll get real intense about it.
Competitive.
Yeah.
Shen, do you have a favorite app you're using right now?
Well, over the weekend I did 2 reviews, but not on Yelp. I'm like a kind of super Yelper, but it was this app survey that actually... that my reviews actually goes to the restaurant management and chef. It's a formatted review, so it's kind of interesting. It's, I feel quite a bit of, empowerment, I guess.
So it's a restaurant review app?
Yeah, it's a restaurant review app, but it's not
business Yelp.
To business.
It's called
Servy, S-E-R-V-Y, and the review goes directly to the restaurant management, not public. So it's not shown as a public
process.
Okay,
that's interesting. Yeah. And you said it's S-E-R...
V-Y.
V-Y dot...
Yeah, Servy.
An app.
Just okay. Servy app, yeah.
And it's iTunes and Android?
I believe so, yes. Yeah, I use it on my iPhone. Yeah.
And do you fill it out anonymously as well? Are you anonymous or no?
Yeah, you're not anonymous to Servy, but you are to the restaurant. Yes. Yeah.
Do restaurants have to be participating in Servy for you to be able to rate a restaurant, or can you rate anything?
No, they don't. The Servy actually opened it to all restaurants. So, but they do curate the review. The whole idea for this highly curated B2B app is that you don't just talk about that was a great experience. That wouldn't constitute a useful review for the restaurant management. So they have formatted review. And also, I think they only pass on about 40%. So they really control the quality of the feedback. Yeah.
So when you say they only pass on 40%, is that the pass on to the restaurant or
yes.
pass on to the public? So just they decide.
It's not to the public. It's okay. Only to the restaurant. Yeah.
Can you see the other reviews when you're in the app or no?
No, you cannot. Yeah.
No, you cannot.
Yeah. So, I actually was just commenting on that over the weekend when I was writing the second review. I said there's got to be some way to get the more social aspect to it, because it's as good as it is, because you're directly talking to the restaurant. I think people probably like the social aspects as well.
Well, that's definitely part of why I think people like to make reviews online. But so you send a review to the restaurant, and then what does the restaurant do with it? Do they communicate back to you, or are they just using it to aggregate data and feedback? Is there a benefit to you, or is it just the satisfaction of knowing you got to tell the restaurant what you thought?
Well, the benefit is very direct, but I think they could do even more. One thing that was really impressed me is that each time you write a review, Servy make a donation, make one meal donation on your behalf. And it gives a varied amount of reimbursement or cash depending on your choice. So it's something between $1 to $20 for your restaurant check or cash. Yeah.
So then how does Servy make money?
Well, the restaurants pay them. So basically democratize a little-known industry called either mystery shopping secret shopper.
Mystery shopper.
Yeah.
Right, because the difference with Yelp is people want other people to know, this is what I thought. They want the restaurant to know, this is what I thought, particularly in a negative situation, because I think people post on social media because they want the restaurant or the business to give them something or to compensate them something or to change something.
Yeah.
So if you're doing it anonymously, so then why do you do it anonymously? Is it because it donates to...
It's really the second aspect that the what you say matters directly to they're listening. Yeah, when I first saw this app, eventually Foodex and my fund decided to invest in them. Is that the restaurant really don't like TripAdvisor and Yelp?
Because, no, they don't.
Yeah. So part of the reason, of course, is because some aspects is gamed, but more because there's a lot of things the Yelpers saying the restaurant can do nothing about.
Right.
So yeah. So this is and also they have a pretty ancient review, kind of open review system called Secret Shopping, and it's not that efficient. So this kind of marries the two together. Yeah. So for me, I mean, I was trying. I've been doing Yelp for a while, so I was trying both, and it's really the aspect of giving the comments directly to the chef and to the restaurant owner. That kind of exciting, and of course the donation and the I guess discount or that helps. Yeah.
So this is an app and a company that you've invested in.
Yes,
with your accelerator or as a person.
Yes, we took with accelerator. We actually took them in FoodX in our inaugural cohort last September. At
okay.
that time, it was just a concept and the mock-up, and now they have 100 customers in New York. They're expanding nationally. Quite exciting.
So this is the perfect segue into what Shen does, FoodX. Food-X.com is the website if you want to check it out. It is an accelerator that focuses on food companies and food ventures and food enterprises. It was founded a year ago in 2014. A lot of people in the restaurant and the food space don't really know what accelerators are because they come primarily from tech and business. The first accelerator was the Y Combinator, and it came out of Cambridge, Massachusetts in 2005. And 2005 is fairly... On the one hand, it seems like light years and ancient history in the tech and startup world, but in real normal people time, it's really only 10 years, which is not that long. Just in a nutshell, what an accelerator does is it takes a business that is at the very beginning stages and it puts them into an environment where they can be in touch with mentors, business people, technology people, people inside and outside of their field. It gives them access to money. It may pay them while they're building up their business, give them an opportunity to fund, and hopefully accelerate the new business process from what might take a few years into something that could be as short as just a few months. And that works really well in the technology space because when you're building a tech product, you can perpetually reiterate and look for different things and have a lot of people collaborate. It's a little bit different when you talk about food because food is really a real-time experience in many instances, especially if you're talking about something agriculturally speaking. It just takes a certain amount of time for stuff to grow. So accelerators are something that are very, very new, I think, to the restaurant and the food world. And the first question that I would put to you, Shen, is, just out of curiosity, what is the benefit to you as a business person starting an accelerator where you're basically giving all these companies help and money for free? I mean, the transaction is a very interesting one. What motivates you to create a business that's really helping other businesses with a lot of valuable assets?
Well, it's not for free. I mean, we take a small equity stake, you know, somewhere between 6 to 10%, and of course that seems very low traditionally in the food and restaurant space. But our hope is that this way we achieve two things. One is value creation is still primarily done by the excellent team we bet on. And then together they will grow very successful businesses. So it's a portfolio approach that some 10% or 6% of a very successful company will cover the whole portfolio. Hopefully all of them if we choose them right. And so it's the way we look at the whole space for the last few years is that when you look at the food and beverages in the U.S. Market alone, that's $1.4 trillion. And globally, that's $5 trillion. Just take U.S. as an example.
So the food and beverage space, $5 trillion globally.
That's annual revenue. It's just
annual revenue.
That doesn't include agriculture. Doesn't include wellness or related environment or medical. Just food and beverage proper.
So food and beverage proper meaning restaurants, companies that make products, grocery stores, retail, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Yeah, all food and beverages, and a little less than half of that is restaurant. But when you look at the goods that are sold, services provided, especially the food itself and beverages itself, that, you know, using a micropolitan phrase, I mean, maybe, I think, minimum, we think it's about two-thirds, maybe a lot more, that are kind of food look-alike substances, food look-alike objects. They're high in calorie, but with negligible nutrients. You know, so they're not only not very tasty, but they're bad for your health and certainly bad for the environment. That means bad for the health of our children and Earth. Right. So basically, we look at this, we think, wow, this is comparable to, say, Internet 20, 30 years ago, meaning that majority, we're talking about $1 trillion a year revenue in the U.S. market alone.
So right? $1 trillion for the food and beverage industry in the U.S. annually.
Yeah, that can be and need to be disrupted, need to be changed for just better food, you know, tastier food and more sustainable food.
So disruption is also something that comes from the tech and the startup space, which is not a word that we use really in the food and beverage and restaurant and hospitality space. When you say disruption, what does that mean?
Well, that means the industry is stuck on the wrong path, and with usually outside, but doesn't have to be outside, but usually with outside forces, it does a course correction, and it is when it's done successfully, then disruption happened, meaning that basically, let's look at, it's my belief and the SS Venture Fund's belief that in the next few decades, the big names on in the food space will be different. A lot of them don't even exist yet. And that's where we see the big opportunity. You know, we see an opportunity not just for profit, but also this is what's known as a triple bottom line or triple P, right? So profit, people and planet. So it's one of those rare opportunities where you can create very successful businesses that's not only highly profitable, hyper growth, but also good for have a good social and environmental impact. But that is a course correction the food industry need to have.
Right. So the three P's: profit, people, and planet, and a course correction. I would say that is on the larger food, industrial food company space. Those three things have been important to, I think, small-scale restaurants and food and beverage for quite some time. But we will talk more about that after we come back from a break, and we'll find out what type of sponsors we have today and hear some new music.
This one's called 1080p by Vesa. We'll be right back on Tech Bytes.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
I'm Jennifer Leuzzi. This is Tech Bytes on the heritageradionetwork.org. Every Monday afternoon at 1 p.m., we talk about the intersection of food and technology. And today, that intersection of food and technology is food-x.com. FoodX is a culinary accelerator, taking a page really from Silicon Valley. It combines food and culinary startups, new businesses, and puts them into a 3.5-month program that gives them access to funding and mentors within the industry, hoping to create profitable businesses as well as businesses that may change the landscape of what's happening now. We're talking with Shantong, who's one of the founders of FoodX. And, you know, he talks about the Michael Pollan book and things being broken in the food space, agriculture, big business, and things needing to change. And these are all things that have been, you know, floating around in the food world for a long time. And now they're starting to reach Silicon Valley and business and tech entrepreneurs. And I would put the question to you, Shen, why are you interested in this space now? I mean, the struggle for quality food and feeding America has been something that's been ongoing for decades. And now it is really coming to the forefront of what people are talking about, what people are, you know, concerned about. Why now?
Well, there's a very personal connection to this. I think that's what I find it most interesting and exciting in the food space, in the food movement. So mine was my kids. You know, they started in Lower Manhattan. They go to, if you want to start early, private school is the only choice. By the time their public school choices, all three of them actually were lucky enough. They tested in a city gifted program, and then we have a lunch problem because one of the reasons my wife and I want them to be in public school is to share a meal with families from all walks of life. So, and like what we do at home, right? But at dinner, with dinner guests, frequent guests, but we still end up packing lunch because they wouldn't eat school lunch.
So you have three children then in the public schools in New York City right now, or was
yes.
this before?
Yes.
Yeah. What grades are they in?
It's soon to be first and fourth and sixth.
So it was your actual experience with the public school lunch system that made you start to think about the status of the food system in New York?
Yeah, it's among other reasons. My wife and I both were trained in botany and went on for biochemistry in our graduate program. So there's that interest from biological aspects, and I'm a foodie. I cook all the time and dinner parties. But it's really the school lunch situation is a daily reminder. I mean, it was a very explicit reason that we want our children, if the school is good enough, we want our children to be in public school system. And but then sharing that meal or lunch, that we still end up packing lunch just like when they were in private school. So it's a daily reminder. They come back, they talk about it, because we talk about food all the time at home. And it's only one time that we try to always be together. That's a dinner time. It's a long tradition since I was back in China in the 80s and 70s. And they talk about, they joke about how awful the lunch is. You know?
There's a show that talks about school lunch on Heritage Radio Network that you might want to check out. And it's definitely a topic that New York City chefs and other people have been vocal and very involved in, because to your point, it is so critical. You want to fuel like the little people's minds, but you need to also fuel their bodies.
Yeah, that's what we find out then in preparation for before we put this much money behind this idea. FoodX is that more than half of the American parents, their single most important concern out of all categories, not just food, out of all categories, is food for their children. So we see all of these things, this research coming. So basically, to talk about the timing, is that we look at the food landscape, right? And in the cultural arena, in terms of behavioral change, I mean, the investigative journalists and cultural icons and writers and culinary leaders basically have paved the way. And now you have more than one in four Americans basically have a clear understanding of what's going on, and they read the labels. They still don't end up having all the right food they wanted, but there's a very clear desire with lack of choices in the marketplace. They really want to eat right and for their children, right? So, but then the policy and the political environment is not quite there yet. But we believe that for something this common, for something like we always say, we are what we eat, and it's true, but you can't have this attachment to just a uber artisanal or small. That's very beautiful. That's nice. But we really need real access, highly scalable access to good food for consumers, for eaters and families. So that's where this idea that we need to provide a business engine for this movement.
So you must not think that the business environment itself is moving along fast enough if you're creating an accelerator to make that process faster.
Well, somebody say the dirty little secret is not too little. It's not a secret that generally the United States and the world is moving to the wrong direction. And I say, well, this is not ideological, this is just fact. That it's really bizarre that you look at the world that the single biggest problem is not lack of clean water or hunger. It's actually, you think of any society, any country barely moving out of poverty, the first thing they do is to move to this very bizarre, quote-unquote, Western diet that is highly processed food that's animal protein-centric, right? So again, you know, high in calorie with negligible nutrients, right? So this trend is actually the other way around. So it's great to accelerate good business disruptions and food innovations in this space, but we kind of have to really try hard to reverse that trend.
So in some of the businesses that you've supported, you've gone through two accelerator programs.
Yes.
You've just finished the second one, and you're now taking applications for the third one.
Yes, the deadline is almost up July 10th, yes.
July 10th, which is this Friday. So if people have a small business that they're looking to accelerate, maybe visit food/x.com and take a look at that. But so then how do you, and to that point, if people are interested, how are you judging and selecting the businesses that you put into the portfolio? Because what you're describing in terms of changing the perception of what type of food we aspire to eat, changing the larger food supply and how we eat, you know, having attended the second food accelerator where you talked about all the different businesses, they were fairly diverse. There was a company called Kitchen Bowl that is video recipes that people can input themselves. So I can see how that relates to it in terms of people creating better food at home. But then you had something called Tasting Collective, which is interesting, chef-curated community dinners in restaurants. And that, to me, just sort of seemed like entertainment and like creating parties and, you know, events for millennials. And that, to me, while maybe a great idea for a successful business, doesn't really seem to speak to this transformative, you know, disruptive impact you're looking to make in the food system in the United States.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting question. That, like, just Tasting Collective or even Survey, what we see in them, right? Just Tasting Collective as an example, that we have, when we select our businesses, there are now 22 filters we use, because a large volume of application, a few hundred for 10 spots each half year, each cohort. So we do two every year, so about 20 companies minimum. But the out of a few hundreds, I mean, it's harder to get into FoodX than Stanford and Harvard. I mean, it's about 3% or less. So we have a pretty large screening committee, a lot of volunteers and mentors, and they use these filters to rate it, and then it goes through several cycles of selection to the final 10. So the five mission filters are, first is taste.
So you have 22 filters.
Five of them we call them mission filters. The first one is actually taste. We believe, you know, food shouldn't be just source of energy; it should be source of fun, and enjoyment, right? And personal communal responsibilities, sustainability, healthy, being healthy, and the last is specifically disruptive to the current industrial agriculture and food system. So those are the five filters, right? So in this case, like what Mark Pittman said, right? I mean, as soon as you touches your food, 90% of the problem are gone, right? Something like that, right? So if people have an easy way to kind of go to restaurants and have chef to be present in this wonderful tradition exists in almost all cultures as feast, right? And compared to Lunchables and TV dinners, that is a light touch, huge change. So it's like on the surface, it may not be that preachy in its mission. In fact, some of our founders don't think about missions when they're. I mean, they still, even after the accelerator, they just go on building up their businesses. But so in this case, it really fit into two of our filters. You know, it's a taste and communal. You know, when you get together, eat food, good food makes people happy. You know, it's
that's
like,
very true.
Yeah. So the feast is something that's really, you know, so it's core to traditional good food. But in general, Jennifer, that we don't necessarily require our companies to be a mission business. In fact, if they score very high in the business and the cohort filters, the other filter criteria, they could still come into the accelerator. And survey was one. It wasn't, still at its core, it wasn't designed to have a big impact in one of the five. It improves restaurants' business, which is a good service, but it's not mission as such, right? So it's wonderful to see a company like Survey really got accelerated and developing very quickly. But then if you go to their app, the front and center literally on their app is this donation thing. You know, it's a extra to their core business, but they choose to do that, and I think I feel great about it. Yeah.
So that's also an interesting point where their core business itself might not be particularly mission driven to one of these philosophical arenas, but the mission of the company itself or the vision of the company itself might have some of these tenets. So that part of their doing business is also giving back to other businesses and giving to charities and supporting other things along the way.
Yeah, but more importantly, that we look at things, to put it simply, their digital side of things, that is pretty straightforward, and that we are pretty sure you will do really well. That is to bring the tried and true aspects of digital efficiency, for example, into a industry that is not yet as advanced as compared to
tech and bio.
You know?
Definitely not advanced. I often say on the show that the tech level of restaurants is a pencil on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah,
so very much in an industry that has not caught up to Silicon Valley, for sure.
Well, it's not for long. You know,
we're
trying to make a difference. But the more important is the other side of things. So as we look at the real food side of things, you know, like here in Brooklyn, we have a number of companies we're really betting on, and one is actually called Next Door Organics. They're what I call super CSA. Is they're like a consumer supported agriculture. The CSA has been around for a couple of decades, but the super CSA really, I believe, provide a real alternative, compelling alternative to grocery shopping, to the current food shopping behavior. That is aggregation of many CSAs and farms. It could be up to 200. And then so the result is that not only you have produce, but you have protein and the value added, like say a jar of miso paste or something, right? So you can you can really just buy from this CSA or subscribe to this CSA. And they actually, 75% of their delivery is done by pickup locations.
Which is very CSA.
Yeah. So this is their very
Roberta's Pizza. Roberta's Pizza and the Heritage Radio Network compound is, I think, the epicenter of the pirate foodie revolution. We got everything happening here.
Yes.
Everything from live radio to Michelin fine dining to wood-fired pizza ovens to CSA pickups and a tiki bar just to make sure everything goes smooth.
What we find is most interesting is that people don't just come, I think every Wednesday afternoon, to pick up their bags from Next Door Organics. They stay around and become a kind of a block party, and it goes back to the communal.
Yeah, that's very much part of the CSA philosophy and experience.
Yeah, and then if you look at that in terms of impact, I mean, they source on average 80 miles. 80 miles.
An 80-mile radius.
Radiance from Brooklyn and Lower Manhattan. And that compares to 300 miles fresh direct and 1,500 miles on average for every single grocery item in the U.S.
Wow.
That's how much food travels before you get to get to consumers.
Well, they often say, you know, FedEx is my farmer in the restaurant business. We are just about out of time, and at the end of each show, I always like to ask my guests for a bit of advice for the folks listening to Tech Bites. And so you call your getting ready to select the next round of cohorts. And cohorts is sort of the class of companies that you are going to incubate. You're getting ready to pick a new batch of businesses, and the application process is on the website. You talk about the 20 filters that you're looking at and the 20 different points. What is your advice to someone who is starting a food venture right now and is hoping to get into an accelerator or hoping to attract investors and supporters to take their idea to the next level? What would you advise them to do?
Well, the first, actually think about doing well by doing good, because I'm not preaching a mission, because we believe that the biggest opportunity in the food space is actually by doing good food, by doing the right things for taste, for society, for environment, right? And then think about scalability. You know, we cannot provide a real alternative to people by just staying small. You know, so maybe you don't have to always think about only scaling up. That's the methodology by tech hypergrowth.
What does that mean? What does that mean? Scaling
just
up,
keep getting big. Yeah, but you can
bigger and bigger.
Yeah, you can scale up by scaling out, such as say Next Organics. I mean, they're really providing a platform for these dozens of farms and CSAs and reaching a much broader audience. Right. So you can enable the little guys. Think about eBay. Think about Google Search. Right. I mean, they become big by enabling the little guys. You know. So
when you say scale up, you mean sort of vertically adding more pieces to the business, and then when you say scaling out, you mean more horizontally, like an Airbnb or an eBay, where services themselves stay exactly the same, but you expand your user base and your customer base horizontally to sort of blanket the world.
You can keep the fragmented nature of a good food movement, maybe even enhancing it by enabling it so that more of such businesses or services can be accessible. It could be a marketplace, peer-to-peer. There are many tried-and-true ways of becoming a big business by enabling a lot of small services and providers. Yeah, and also we are accelerator is slightly later stage in the startup phase. Basically,
so your accelerator is a slightly later stage.
No,
in the
accelerator
startup
in
phase?
General.
Oh, accelerators
focus
in general.
On product market fit, which means is after ideation. Yeah, after your idea is a little bit mature. Always remember to have a co-founder. You know, we don't take a single founder, because it takes a village.
Right.
You know,
so
as
you
people
need,
say,
you
start with
to
two.
Balance off each other.
Yeah.
You only take businesses that have co-founders.
When we make the exception, we often pay a big price for it. We have this Steve Jobs rule that, I mean, there's some fantastic founder that just know it all, and we don't see the vision. But we just find single founder companies don't benefit nearly as much from our mentor network. And more importantly, even during the program, the reason we call them cohort, the reason we design open space is really for this cohort learning philosophy.
Cooperative, meaning more than one, and people collectively coming together.
We
That's
actually make them to remix and solving each other's problem, doing team building exercise, but not based on the individual companies, but randomly remix a group.
Well, I think that's really great advice. Whether people are looking to join an accelerator or not, when you're starting a business, do well by doing good. Have a co-founder so you don't become a despot and a dictator. And think about scaling your business out to the most people. I think that's great advice. I want to thank my guest, Shen Tong from FoodX Accelerator, for coming out to Brooklyn on the show.
Great to be here.
It's fascinating, and maybe you'll have to check back in with us when you go through the cohort group number 3 and see what kind of interesting things you've
got happening
there.
Yeah, you're doing great things.
I want to thank all the Heritage Radio Network listeners. I want to thank the boys in the booth. And if you like the show, come back and see us again on Monday at 1 p.m. If you love the show, go to heritageradionetwork.org and throw us, you know, whatever you paid for a nice coffee today. Make more shows.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.